Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
So, Taylor, I've been doing a little thinking. We need to revamp our intro. I think we need some more listeners. I've been watching this YouTube series lately where all they do is like make fun of YouTubers' intros. And
sounds like a great YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's funny. So here we go. What's up, YouTube? It's your boys, Andy and Taylor, coming at you with another episode Beyond the Batcave. Today we're talking about Batman killing 9,000 people. Just joking. It's sensational, Taylor. It's clickbait. This is totally how we're doing it from now on. We're
going to get some listeners. Intro.
Yeah. But anyway, here's the real deal. This is Beyond the Batcave, guys. I'm sorry to yell at you, but it's just been on my mind today. Why do YouTubers always yell at the audience the very first thing? And they always say to smash that like button. Why can't we just click on it, you know?
I'm a gentle clicker myself.
Yeah, don't smash the like button, guys. Or the subscribe button. But press both of them. All right. So there we go. That's a whole minute gone. 29 to go.
Great. Here we are. We're excited.
All right. We're going to do some serious talking, though, because we have some heavy emotional news to deliver today and also heavy emotional events and comics to talk about. We're going to talk about a little news, a little movie news. Then we're going to talk about the latest DC Comics event, The Button, which is a Flash and Batman crossover event. So buckle up, everybody, and get ready to smash that like button. Let's do it.
All right. So let's dive right into the news. We'll try to be quick here so we can save most of our time for the button. But Variety caught up with Charles Roven, producer for some of the Wonder Woman films, or sorry, some of the Warner Brothers DC films, and said that, quote, Whedon was already working with us on some of the scenes for the additional photography that we're going to be doing shortly.
Man, Charles Roven is a gold mine.
You know, like, he is. You just ask that guy a question, he'll spill something.
Like, I think if we want to have some success and get people to smash that like button, what we should do is just like sneak up behind Charles Roven and just yell boo, and he'll just be like, okay, okay, Ares is in Wonder Woman. Justice League has Darkseid in it. He'll just start blurting out secrets. Because like basically people ask him the most inane questions, and he'll just throw out these super tantalizing things. I can't think of anything specific right now, but Charles Roven says stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Just thinking.
If there's any like leaked anything, I feel like his name is in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, so sorry I didn't give much preface on that, but basically, we reported last time that Zack Snyder stepped away from Justice League and Joss Whedon's taking over, but now it looks like Joss Whedon had been helping out with some additional shoots before Snyder even stepped away. Any thoughts, takeaways on this, Andy? I don't think I'm much worried about it, because I think it just shows that this happens all the time, you know what I mean? They collaborate together, you know, like Nolan, obviously he was a producer, but Nolan came in and helped Zach with Man of Steel, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
they just kind of give some vision. I think, I forgot, there might have been another quote, but I think it was a lot of like kind of the dialogue or the writing for some of these additional scenes that he wanted some help with. And Joss Whedon is a class A character when it comes to the writing, so.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. I don't know, just the vision of camaraderie this gives me. Just Zach's like, hey, Joss, just need some help. Help me finish up my vision. And I hope that Joss helps Zach finish his vision. And I just like that. Just
yeah.
Two guys getting a project done, helping each other out. Joss has Zach's back. I love it.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, we talked at length about this last week, so I don't know how much we need to retread the same path.
I don't think we do need to
all right.
At all.
Yeah, let's keep talking then.
Cool.
Oh my gosh, guys. Wonder Woman's tomorrow. Also, let's just have a little chat, Taylor. The first reactions are out there, right? We talked about that last time.
We did.
But since you and I recorded, in fact, the night we recorded the last episode, there was fan screenings for Wonder Woman all over the U.S. and Canada and maybe Mexico. I'm not sure. And people, I've tried to stay pretty dark. I've not been on Facebook or Twitter for over a week.
That's impressive. You've had much more strength than I do.
But still, some opinions have gotten to me, and I've not heard a single one that hasn't proclaimed it like an awesome movie and a win for DC Comics fans overall. So that excites me, because I haven't gone into a movie feeling like this in this whole DCEU yet.
That's true. It feels good to go in with confidence rather than skepticism.
Yeah, I've heard mixed things about every single DCEU movie up until now. And now I've only heard good things. So this is looking like a good sign. You know, if we were very clickbaity, we would say that Wonder Woman will save the DCEU. I don't think it was ever in that much trouble.
No. They were going to move forward regardless. They always had confidence that Wonder Woman would do good things, but it was never like panic mode, like, Patty Jenkins, it's you all bust!
Yeah.
So, you know, we're good.
So I'm super excited for next week's episode where we're going to talk about this movie in depth. You know, just talk about what it means to the world as well as what's actually in the movie. It's going
to
be great.
What it means to our world.
Yeah, exactly. Fantastic.
So, along lines with this excitement about Wonder Woman, Fandango caught up with Patty Jenkins, and she says she is very, 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 that was three verys, interested in Wonder Woman sequel.
You don't often see that amount of repetition in the title of an article.
That's true. That's very true.
That's some gutsy journalism right there.
Seriously. And so she just said it's definitely something she's interested in. She liked the team that they've built and what they've been doing. And they're excited to talk about it, continuing moving forward together. And she said last month, we didn't report this on our podcast, but she wanted to bring Wonder Woman to America and have her become an international hero. So I don't think there's much to say here, but I was curious, Andy. Like, I know we haven't seen the first film yet.
Yeah.
But what do you speculate could consist of a Wonder Woman sequel? I think we kind of know generally how things are going to go, because she kind of hides herself from mankind. She's going to battle Ares. We don't know all the ins and outs, but like,
yeah.
What do you think could happen in America?
Well, let me pitch you my sequel. Wonder Woman. And this is going to have some inaccuracies from the comics, but we got to make it work with what we know, because apparently she's coming to America. So here's my sequel. Wonder Woman seeks a land of peace and freedom. She goes with Steve Trevor to America and decides to lie low for a while, because she just can't. She's had enough of this war and this nonsense. So she finds herself strolling through the jungle, you know, as you do, and suddenly she's attacked by a blindingly fast and strong and camouflaged just thing. She finds out, yes, it's Cheetah. Now she has to stop this diabolical plot, but more importantly, save Cheetah from herself, at which she will ultimately fail. And it'll be more like a horror movie, like a jungle survival slasher film. That's my sequel.
Wow, that's incredible. Where is this jungle in the United States?
That's right. There's not any jungles in the United States, really, are there?
There's the redwoods.
Hawaii.
Those are forests, but the,
yeah. Okay, wait.
Hawaii would work.
Central America, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Go down to Panama.
She just says America.
Oh,
she
perfect. Yeah, right, yeah. You know. And we use Panama by Van Halen for the soundtrack.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Every trailer.
Every single trailer just has Panama, and cameos by the members of Van Halen.
I'm down with this.
In fact, Eddie Van Halen will play the Cheetah. He's close enough.
He was born for that role.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Washed up rock stars from the hair metal 80s will be playing the new DC villains.
The hair metal villains.
Yeah.
No, okay. But I'm excited to see what'll come out of it. I don't think this will happen, but part of it would be really cool if, like, you get some Golden Age team-ups. You know what I mean? Like, if you had, like, a Jay Garrick Flash show up or, like...
Oh, that would be super cool. Like, yeah, why not?
Like,
why not?
I thought that'd be really cool. I don't know if they'll go there, but I guess by the time we get a sequel, we'll have a fairly established universe going on, you know? Anything's possible in 3 years from now.
That's true. Very true. I guess I was thinking about it. We don't really know when The Flash is going to come out anymore.
No.
But it could be around the same time as Wonder Woman 2.
That's true.
Sorry, you just got me kind of excited with the Jay Garrick idea. Like, what if there's a whole Justice Society?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know.
The way the world is presented in Man of Steel, I kind of doubt it. They'd have to do some Geoff Johns-type writing to explain why everybody was surprised by Superman when they had, like, a big League of Heroes 50 years ago. But
he could be undercover, you know what I mean? It's not like everybody knows he exists yet, you know? Anyways,
that's true.
I thought that'd be fun. So, yeah, we're excited to see. And when we got another poster, Patty Jenkins threw out a poster on Twitter. And just none of these posters disappoint in the slightest.
That one looks nice.
Yeah, not much to say. I just think it's great. I was surprised to see that a poster got, like, posted the day before the movie comes out, but, you know, whatever.
This movie comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is amazing. I feel like just 6-10 months ago, I was so excited about Suicide Squad, and here we are yet again, less than a year later, and Justice League in 6 months. Less than 6 months.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's so beautiful.
And things are just not stopping. They just keep rolling and rolling.
Oh, here we go. Chuck Roven coming back for a second time on the podcast. I did not know. If I had known this was going to be such a Chuck Roven-filled episode, I would have been a lot more pumped to record, and I was already pretty excited.
So why don't you tell us what he has to say about Aquaman?
So, Cinema Blend talks to Chuck Roven at this Wonder Woman.
Because they just know who to go to if they want some news.
Oh my gosh. I feel like this is just... It's going to keep going this way. Pretty soon, like, every single bit of news is going to come from Chuck Roven's mouth. It's going to be like, Charles Roven said this. And it's just going to be like five
pages.
They're
going to have to start, like, sending him to different board meetings so that he has false news. So that when we actually see the movies, we're actually surprised by something.
Oh, yeah. They're like, yeah, the real brain trust is in that room, Charles. We're having to do some real cloak and dagger stuff to get the paparazzi off our heads. We'll go in the other room and it's like... They just dressed up the janitor in, like, a $5,000 suit, and he starts talking about, you know, Captain America and stuff, and Chuck's like, oh, yeah, great idea.
Greatest crossover of all time!
Oh, man. Today at work, I heard there was one of my coworkers talking to another one, just having a clandestine conversation behind me, and this guy was totally showing her a Wonder Woman trailer and saying that he was pumped.
Oh, yes.
Like, obviously not a super big comic book nerd, but he was showing it to her, and she was like, wait, was she around when... In the last Captain America movie, and then I facepalmed, but he's like, no, come on, it's DC.
Oh,
and I was like,
yeah,
oh,
redemption.
That's my boy. Neither one of them really knew that much, but at least he knows that she wasn't in Captain America Civil War. That's good.
That is.
All right, sorry. So, Chuck Roven, we're back to this guy. So, they talk to him about the timeline. They ask where Aquaman fits in the timeline of the DCU, and he says, Aquaman will make a reference to Justice League. There will be some reference of something that preceded Aquaman that will be in Aquaman. Dang it, Chuck. Like, what kind of answer is that? I'd come to have so much faith in him. That's the vaguest thing I've heard all day. Okay. Let's analyze.
Well, I think the big thing is that we were questioning whether Aquaman's movie was going to be like an origin film.
Yeah.
And if it was an origin film, it would take place before Justice League.
It doesn't sound like an origin film from that, but I'm sure you could interpret it the other way.
That's true.
I do feel like we're going to get a little bit of Aquaman's origin in Justice League.
Probably
a good amount.
Part of the evidence for that is they've cast a young Arthur Curry.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some throwbacks. They've cast like his mother and his like Earth father, but that doesn't necessarily mean they go back, but we kind of know they are.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, this is a good bit of news, but we've got a long way to go till Aquaman, so it just starts up the hype train.
Yeah.
Did you ever see those memes back before Justice League came out? Not Justice League, Batman v Superman, where it was like, get on the hype train, it was just like Zack Snyder's face on a huge train, and it just made me laugh.
I didn't see that one. All the ones that I saw were Zod released the hype engine.
Oh, yes. Good memes.
Good
There's
times.
Some good memers out there that deal exclusively in the DCEU. It's beautiful.
Yeah, so thank you, memers. This episode goes out to you.
Oh, and plus, I want some memes. Just tweet some at us, please. I need some good ones. I haven't had a good laugh at a DCEU meme since the Zack Attack stuff.
What about the Zack Jesus memes? Those are always pretty good.
Yeah, those are funny. I haven't seen too many of those around, though.
And then we reported last time about some of the set photos for Aquaman.
Oh, yeah.
The Golden Coast Bulletin reported...
Very notorious news outlet.
Well, you know, they're
like,
filming...
Not like we can talk, I'm sorry.
That's true. But they're filming in the Golden Coast.
That's cool.
So, like, they're, like, on the scene. They got a lot more set photos. You should go check them out. Basically, they all surround kind of this bar on a dock. And you see Amber Heard as we saw her before in those set photos, but she's actually talking to Jason Momoa in some of these.
Okay.
But he's like in this trench coat and obviously not about to jump in the water. So, I don't know. You could read into that a little bit. His stunt double was also seen on the set, so probably a bar fight.
Jason Momoa has a stunt double?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Probably just for fight choreography. I was like, if there's somebody in the world that I'm convinced does not need a stunt double, it's Jason Momoa.
Worried about that guy hurting himself.
There's a video of making the rounds a while back of Jason Momoa like chugging a thing of beer and then throwing a tomahawk dead center on a target. Have you seen that?
No, but I did see him working out today like a madman.
I don't think he needs a stunt double. Who's afraid to get like blind drunk and then chuck tomahawks?
Well, here's the thing. It's probably for the protection of the other people.
Oh, yeah. If you had Jason Momoa doing the fight choreography, we'd have some real knockout punches.
Oh, yeah.
Deaths.
Or if you actually need Jason Momoa's character to take a punch, you get someone else to take
it. It really saves Warner Brothers a lot of money that they don't have to keep hiring stunt doubles over and over for everybody else because Jason Momoa keeps critically injuring them in their fight scenes. Okay, so...
That's about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm glad we figured that out.
Cool.
Also, I just want to say, I don't know if I can do this, Taylor. I don't think I can go down a rabbit hole of checking out set photos all the time of Aquaman.
That's true.
Because I actually came pretty close to going clinically insane for The Dark Knight Rises. Because I did this. I looked at the set photos every day.
I feel like that was like the first like superhero film where set photos were a big deal. You know, like, those are the first ones I remember seeing all the time.
Yeah, it might be because there was huge scenes filmed outdoors with tons of extras. Hard to control. Like that last, the war in the street.
And midday.
There were tons of pictures of that. And I remember seeing, like, 6 tumblers on the street. And I was like, what the heck happens in this movie? And I barely slept or ate for almost a year.
Wow.
Yeah. By the time the movie came out, I looked like Christian Bale in The Machinist.
Wow.
It was pretty bad.
And you know what? Well, why don't you let me look at the set photos? I'll just let you... I'll, like, describe them.
I'm fine with what's going on now. You can describe the set photos. I just can't look at them.
Sounds good. So the last little bit of news we have is... we've mentioned before, Batman and Harley Quinn's coming out this summer. It's a new DC animated film. I think it's the next one that we have coming out. It's coming out August 15th digitally, August 29th on Blu-ray. There was an official trailer put out by Warner Brothers. What did you think of it,
Andy? Just watched it. To put it succinctly, I was totally whelmed. And that's about all I have to say.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. There were already like some fan-made trailers based off of some like featurettes and stuff. And like... I was just not super impressed. And in this trailer, Harley's accent, I love the actress.
Yeah, the voice bothers me.
She's a pretty good actress. She's from the Big Bang Theory.
Who's doing the voice?
She's from Big Bang Theory. Wait. Melissa Rauch, I think is her name.
Oh, okay.
But it just sounds like she has her nose plugged. Like,
maybe that's what she's doing. Here, let's give it a try. Go ahead. Plug your nose and say some Harley lines. Just joking. We don't pressure each other like that on Beyond the Batcave. That's some major peer pressure.
If the listeners, you know, if we get like 2 retweets on this this episode, I'll do a Harley impression.
Taylor, we get more than 2 every time.
Oh, what? I don't even know. You're the Twitter guy.
Just lock yourself in.
200 retweets.
All right. That's a worthy goal. That's a worthy goal. Make it happen, guys. 200 retweets. Taylor will do his Harley Quinn impression. That was actually my favorite thing about the Suicide Squad season. I remember tweeting this out. I got to hear so many podcasters do a hilarious Harley Quinn impression, including myself. I did one.
That's true.
That was good times. Good times.
Yeah. I appreciate...
When Gotham City Sirens comes around, we have to do a whole episode in the Harley voice.
Ooh. Now I'm intrigued.
Or... Poison Ivy will be in that movie, so maybe one of us can do like a sultry Ivy voice and the other one can do like Harley Quinn.
I'm down for this.
We could just get Margot Robbie to come on the podcast, but we won't tell anybody and we'll just have her like say things.
Yeah.
Like I'll just whisper in her ear and she'll say all my lines.
There you go. So yeah, I'm kind of on par with you. I'm glad it exists in the sense that like I like to see the throwback to like the animated Bruce Timm stuff.
Yeah, I like the look.
But just like...
It feels... Okay.
The dialogue feels forced. Yeah.
It feels like a little bit of a perversion of Batman, the animated series. I feel bad to judge it so harshly when I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But I feel like after that trailer, it needs to redeem itself a little bit. I'll still give it a chance when it comes out. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just don't know about that, man.
Yeah.
Depressed sigh.
Well, let's move on to some less depressed sighs.
Alright, yeah. Let's talk the button, huh?
Mm-hmm.
This was cool. This was a cool event.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to have read it. I think it was great for getting people involved again, because we were so tantalized back when we read the DC Rebirth number one, and we found the button, and then it never got mentioned again for like another 6 months? How long has it been?
See, 22 issues. So, like, and they're bi-weekly, right?
Oh, that's almost a year.
Yeah.
Has it been that long since Rebirth started?
Yeah.
Wow, that caught me off guard. So anyway, it's been a while. Finally, we're revisiting the button, and who better to investigate this mystery but the two detectives of the Justice League, Batman and the Flash. Barry Allen, forensic detective by day, the world's fastest man, the Crimson... Oh no, I ran out of...
Scarlet Speedster?
Scarlet Speedster. Ah! Dang it. Alright, well, good thing this isn't Beyond the Flash Cave.
Or the Crimson Chin Cave.
The Crimson Chin? You just entered a whole other universe, my friend.
You're the one who said Crimson. Anyways. So.
Who is Crimson? That's going to bother me. There's somebody beside. There's a name for the Flash that starts with Crimson. I know there is.
Alright.
Okay, we'll look it up later.
Okay.
It'll come to me, and I'll just blurt it out.
So the button. So I like the team up. I haven't read as many comics as you have, Andy, but like I liked this issue because I never really realized how good of a team Flash and Batman would be as far as like detectives go. And I like that you see Flash kind of saying like, hey, I would shoot out all these words at the Justice League, and like they would all just like give me blank stares, except for Batman. Batman could understand me and we could talk. You know, I kind of like that angle.
Yeah, this is especially relatable to people like us, you know, our people.
That's true. Because
this is exactly how I felt. Me and Taylor used to work together, and when I found out he was a Batman geek, it was the exact same thing. I'd be talking about movies and comics at work with these people, and they'd just be blanked out. This one guy was telling me that Batman v Superman doesn't follow the comics, and I was like, well, what comic are you talking about? And he's like, I don't know, the comics. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I found Taylor, and it was like... we could just talk forensics for hours. And then that one time that I was just mortally wounded by the Reverse Flash, I still wanted to talk chop with Taylor, and we still talked about comics.
And your wounds, like, instantly healed themselves enough where you don't go on an adventure with
him. We went through time together on a treadmill. It was beautiful. So this was very, very relatable for me and Taylor, considering that we have actually had an adventure together on a treadmill in the time stream. It was very cool to see that.
It was pretty much...
just on the page.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was fairly accurate.
It brought forth some big, strong emotions in me. Because this was basically a story about my life.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's give a brief synopsis in case, like, people... I mean, you should all go out and read it.
Yeah. Let's get a spoiler warning first. Well, do you want to give some thoughts?
Okay, yeah. Some general thoughts before we go over the spoiler wall. I really liked it. It was interesting for me. I guess I can give a lot of my thoughts that are kind of spoiler-free, because I've read all the King run, except for, like, the last issue after the button. And I'm like, hit and miss with this, like, with what King's been doing so far. Like, he has some cool stories, but, like, I feel like you can go through a whole issue and it feels like 4 minutes of real time have happened. And it's just weird. And so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I feel
like,
that.
It was kind of interesting, like, paralleling it with The Flash, because like, King is such a minimalist with words, and The Flash is not. Williamson, I think, is who writes The Flash right now.
Yeah.
But he, like, one page of a Williamson issue is, like, an entire King issue. And just, like, obviously The Flash talks a lot more than Batman does, but I just felt like it was a lot of...
Yeah, it moves faster, too.
It moves faster, too. That's true.
That's a good point.
And so, yeah, but I thought it was really, really, really cool. It was cool to see them tie back to Flashpoint the ways that they did.
Yeah, that was cool. I never thought we were going to get a sequel to Flashpoint. And I guess it's not like a true sequel, but it was cool to go back to that world.
Like, to be continued.
You know? And like, see what happened in it afterwards.
Because we didn't think there was anything to go back to.
Yeah, it seemed like that whole universe disappeared.
Yeah.
But little did we know that somebody had preserved it.
Yeah. And I don't know, it was cool to get something that was Rebirth, but also so, like, personal to Batman, and that could potentially change Batman in the future. I mean, the end is kind of, not a cliffhanger, but kind of like a, what's Bruce going to do, you know? So, I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to keep reading Batman, because it could take some interesting directions from here on out.
Yeah, cool, good thoughts. Spoiler-free, all I'll say is that it was super fun read. there are some great moments, and I do think that there are some things in here that is on par with the big historic events, like, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths, or like Flashpoint itself. There are some moments in here that will be remembered like that. So this is a must read. If you like comics at all, it's a must read. You gotta go see it. All right, that's all I gotta say.
Spoiler warning.
Yeah, here we go, talking spoilers. I don't think I want to go through the whole thing, just beat by beat. Let's just talk about our favorite moments, huh? So, let's see. I'll throw out my favorite moment, and maybe this is the obvious one, was seeing Bruce talk to his dad.
Yeah.
For the first time in continuity.
Right.
Very cool, and I think the most enduring legacy of this arc is going to be Thomas Wayne and Bruce Wayne united, fighting together, and then Thomas telling Bruce not to be Batman anymore. You don't have to do this for me or your mother. I feel like that could, I don't know, that could be taken a couple different interesting directions, if he remembers that. It could be something akin to, like, the death of Jason Todd, something that really affected the whole character of Batman for the next couple decades, you know?
Yeah.
This has that kind of potential. It depends on where they take it. But.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably, as far as Batman himself goes, that's like the biggest thing here. And so I pulled up issue number 5 from Batman Rebirth. And so Gotham Girl is narrating here. Mm-hmm. And this is right when Gotham, the superhero turned villain, got put down.
Yeah, I remember him.
But essentially, so Gotham Girl says, "Duke and I, we'd come here once a year on the anniversary of my brother's death, just to take time to remember. Remember that this is where it started. The origin of Gotham Girl, the death of Batman." Mm-hmm. And so, and death is in bold, as it should be. But, like, so at the end of this, at the end of the button, I was reminded of this little kind of slip in there by Gotham Girl. Because, like, I don't know, man. Like, you see that those last few panels where the bat signal turns on and Alfred's like, "Sir, are you going to answer that?" And he kind of, like, gives a sigh and looks down. And I think he's going to go answer it that time. But he's questioning, like, his role as the Batman. And so, like, Gotham Girl could be saying actual death or, you know, just he hangs up the cape.
Symbolic death of the Batman.
So, I don't know. That was, like, the biggest, I think, kind of impact thing in Batman storylines. Like you said, like, kind of his dad saying, "Hey, you don't need to do this." Because his whole mission is, like, "I'm avenging the deaths of my parents," you know.
But now that he's had a chance to talk to his dad.
And his dad's like, "You don't need to avenge us, son.
You don't need to. You don't need to do this for me or your mother.
Go live, be happy, raise your son the way I never raised you."
Oh, man. Who cares about Damian, though?
That's true.
Sometimes I care about him.
He don't want to be raised, though. Let's be real.
Yeah, he just wants to slice people up.
Seriously. But yeah, so I think that's the biggest scene. Another scene that I like, I mean, also I feel like King loves to write stories where Batman gets the crap beaten out of him. Like, there's a Bane, there's two Bane
arcs. Whoa, Taylor, spoilers. I'm getting there.
I know.
Okay,
just saying, but I'm just saying there's two Bane arcs.
Yeah.
And, like, it's never a good day when Bane and Batman are around, you know?
Yeah.
And
I guess I'm fine if it's Bane. Because, like, Bane is meant to be Batman's superior when it comes to combat, I guess.
But, like, you think about it. We have, like, what? Well, this is our fourth Batman arc.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them are Bane. He got the crap beaten out of him. He got his butt handed to him by Gotham. And then Reverse Flash comes right after Bane and just, like, throws the hammer down on Batman.
This is a little tough to watch.
Yeah. What I like about this, though, is because so much of it is that, I feel like a bit of the mystery side of Batman's been missing. And I really like that we kind of got a mystery here to figure out.
It was very cool and suspenseful, that first issue.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that was one of the triumphs of that first issue, is that it really made me feel like time was so slow. Like, oh my gosh.
Especially when you're fighting a speedster. Like,
they've got that little clock down in the corner. Uh-huh. He's getting punched like 4 to 8 times a second. Oh man, it was brutal. And then it was just very suspenseful, especially when the clock came down to 0 and we were like, oh man, where's Flash? He's going to be here in 1 minute.
Seriously. And I like how he was able to, I mean, obviously, if Reverse Flash wanted him dead, he could be dead. But, like, I like how he still could hold his own a little bit, like, stab his foot.
Yeah.
I thought that was genius.
Yeah, he got his licks in.
Yeah.
It was good to see.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see good old, Batman, he can get one punch in on anyone.
Right. Yeah. And I like the little line, like, I don't need to kill you, I just need 11 seconds. Mm-hmm. I just like that line. That was cool.
You know, if I was Batman, I wouldn't have said that. Why would you tell him how long you need?
Well, it's just going to confuse him.
Yeah, I guess he probably doesn't know that Flash is coming. This was a great mystery, while we're on the topic of that. I mean, mystery in quotation marks, because, like, it's a mystery to Batman and Flash, but we all know we're dealing with Dr. Manhattan, and we've all known it since DC Rebirth number one.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see Reverse Flash disappear and then just show up dead, like, 1 second later. Like, yeah. What happened? We just didn't know. But we have a pretty good idea.
Right.
And we get to go on this journey with Batman and Barry as they try to find it out. Classic journey on the cosmic treadmill through the time stream. You know, Batman just chilling on his... on the bat line. Yeah. The mystery was good. I enjoyed it. I definitely felt like there was a sense of intrigue that pervaded this whole arc. And it wasn't wrapped up super tightly. I think they were setting up some more things. And there were a bunch of weird things that I just had no idea what they were. And I haven't read the whole Batman run yet, but I don't think they were from that. Like,
no.
The girl that was going crazy watching the hockey game.
Yeah,
and the old man on the roof.
Uh-huh.
No idea. And when the very end, when it zooms into the blood on the button, and then it zooms out, and it's Superman symbol. Like, you got me. I have no idea why that was in there.
That's more of like an allusion to the future and the Doomsday Clock and all the stuff. So yeah. I don't think we're supposed to know what that one is, but it kind of made it seem like we should know what those other two are. And I'm like,
I just didn't. So maybe I need to read DC Rebirth. If someone's out
there, you know, David W. or something, you know. Call our lifelines in on those two character references.
Yeah, we're gonna phone a friend here. Okay, so yeah, I just want to say I think the most emotional moment of this was, first of all, it like broke my heart when Reverse Flash tore up Batman's letter from Thomas. That was awful. But then the fact that he got to see Thomas later was very cool, and talk to him and fight alongside him.
Well, then heartbreaking again that, like, they could have brought Thomas Wayne into existence. You know what I mean?
I think that was done very well.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Because you can't, it's kind of like Uncle Ben. You can't bring back Batman's parents. You just can't.
Oh, no.
You can't bring back Uncle Ben. He has to stay dead. He's the one person in the Marvel Universe that the law is he must stay dead. And the same with Thomas and Martha Wayne. They gotta stay dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because without them, why is Batman Batman? That could be an interesting idea to explore, but I think it would be rejected outright by most fans.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm glad it happened the way it happened, but just, like, kind of the emotional gravity of, like, he could have come back, you know what I mean? And could have been alive and lived with his son and whatnot. I like the line where he's remembering what he said when they were getting raised out of the cave. When he fell down there as a kid. Because I was like, oh, are they just going to pull the Batman Begins line?
Yeah, I'm sure everybody thought that. I had the same thought.
Yeah. But, like, I like that it was different enough. Like, Wayne's never stayed down.
Oh, yeah. It was a little grittier. It felt a little less cheesy this way.
Yeah. So, I like that line. I like the line at the end. I don't know what it entails. But it says, there are poisons that kill you and poisons that open your eyes. I'm like, what is that?
Sounds like a very Dr. Manhattan line.
That's true.
To be honest, like, have you read Watchmen, Taylor?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
So I'm a little out of the loop on this.
That's a must read for many reasons. But yeah, that's his thing, is like just talking in such enigmas that nobody ever knows what he's really saying. Because he's a being that essentially perceives all of time at the same time. And that's just the way he is. And it's very weird. Yeah, you'll just have to read it. I don't think I can attempt to explain this to you, especially
but
not
he kind
air.
Of alludes to that a little bit in the sense, like, his last line there, or one of his.
Yeah.
That says, like, I'm just a puppet who sees the streams.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Very, very Dr. Manhattan. I'm interested to know, why is he doing this? You know, like, obviously he must believe wholeheartedly that he's doing something for the greater good.
Yeah.
And now that I know that you haven't read Watchmen, I won't spoil it for you, but Dr. Manhattan does a couple shocking things in that book.
Yeah.
Because he's a hero, yet holy cow, did he just do that? And he's always absolutely convinced of his own morality. So this will be interesting the way this plays out.
Right.
I was kind of disappointed we didn't actually get to meet him, considering that we all already know who it is, I feel like we should have got a glimpse.
Yeah. Oh, we did get some, like, blue lightning.
Yeah, we got, like, a blue hand, didn't we?
Yeah.
I finished it, like, 4 or 5 days ago, so I'm already starting... So the images are already fading from my memory, but...
Yeah. But it's interesting, you know, because, like... I don't know. Just I haven't read Watchmen, but it's just interesting because you have, like, these gods of these superheroes. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, Reverse Flash basically acknowledges Dr. Manhattan as the Hand of God. You know what I mean? And just, like,
yeah,
for them to bow down in such a way. Not just say, oh, man, that guy's tougher than Darkseid, but, like...
Yeah. We'll have to do a Watchmen episode, maybe near the end of this year.
Yeah.
When we get to Doomsday Clock, which is apparently the next big event, because I have a feeling we're going to need to know a little bit about Watchmen. So I'll reread it then, because yeah. I read it like 1 or 2 years ago, and I actually loved it. But I think we will need to revisit it. So I think that would be cool to do an episode on, because that's exactly the kind of thing I love. It's chock full of themes about superheroes, humans, just deconstructing life in general. Dr. Manhattan is the only actual... Wait, let me think before I say this. I think he's the only actual powered being in Watchmen. Everybody else is shockingly human, and that's what makes it so interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll have to talk about it.
Cool. I'm excited to.
All right. Do you have any other thoughts on the button?
I don't think so. I liked
it. Do we want to theorize a little bit on where this is going? All right. Let's think about Superman for a sec. I feel like a big clash between Superman and Dr. Manhattan would be ideal. And not necessarily, like, fighting each other, because I don't think there's any contest there.
No.
I think it's going to come down to the exchanging of ideals between them. Maybe Superman will share some things about human nature that might just make Dr. Manhattan rethink his life. You never know. I just see some cool potential there, as Superman being the one to lead the charge. And honestly, I've not been good about staying caught up with these Rebirth comics, so I don't even know how Superman is characterized these days.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, because there's lots of different ties. Like, this is the next, like, big story, I mm-hmm. feel like. But, like, there's lots of ties in to other... Like, some of the Flash stuff is more kind of Rebirth-centered.
Yeah.
Like, with the events that have happened. So...
Well, I will say that, then. This event is definitely doing its job. It's making me want to read all the other Rebirth arcs. Because yeah. I was so excited at the promise that was given to me in DC Rebirth number 1. Because... One thing is, I love Green Arrow as he was characterized before New 52, and that was probably my biggest disappointment of New 52 is Green Arrow. Like, I couldn't stand to read those. And then I was so excited to see the goatee back, and then yeah, I haven't read a single one of them, so I got to read some Green Arrow and some Superman to see if they've kind of come back to base, home base, on the way those characters are.
Yeah. So let us know. Guys, what do you think will happen with the button? How are they going to bridge the gap?
Yeah. It's my official prediction. Superman and Dr. Manhattan, they're probably going to be on Mars having a conversation about life. Just kind of a bro talk.
Yeah.
I think that's how
it'll happen. Actually, you know what I'm thinking? So, the end of DC Rebirth number 1.
Yeah.
Those last few panels were finding the button... besides there was a Dr. Manhattan scene, but right before that it was Batman finding the button.
Yeah,
right?
It was like embedded in the wall uh-huh. of the cave.
And then the next crossover or the next kind of Rebirth event we had was with Batman. So now we get these panels where it goes into the button and comes out as Superman. Maybe all that saying is the next Rebirth event is going to be with Superman's story.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
Unless you haven't
researched anything. I think it'll probably be its own thing. Right. It'll be like a limited run.
But it could start with Superman is what
yeah.
I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's almost a given considering what we just saw. Or he'll at least be a main character.
Uh-huh.
Which I'm psyched for. I'll have to catch up on my Superman before then.
Yeah. That'll be good times.
All right. So that's about it. Let's remind everybody. Let's see. Anything big happening tomorrow? Yes, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder Woman. Also... I'm going to make a formal apology and congratulate you if you're still listening, because I actually suspect I may have burst some eardrums with the intro to this episode. It's been weighing heavy on my heart since then.
You just still have the power to edit and yeah. save their earbuds.
Okay, I'll probably drop the sound level a little bit. I think you might be overestimating my skill as a sound editor, but we'll see. So anyway, remember to smash that like button, guys. And I just derailed myself. That's not what we usually say at the end of the episode.
Not at all. But go ahead and find us on Twitter, on Facebook, Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC Movies podcast. Twitter handles at Beyond Batcave. You can find us at our website, beyondthebatcave.com. Please leave us a review on iTunes, spread the word, tell your friends about us. What else can they do for us, Andy? Just high-five your friends.
Yeah.
Take all your friends,
go
your
find enemies, someone who will rattle the cages.
Your frenemies, take them all to Wonder Woman. It'll be a beautiful thing.
Oh, man.
World peace will ensue.
This is a good week. I can't wait for the next episode. Hopefully you guys can't wait either. But anyway, for now, I'm Andy Piper.
I'm Taylor Jackson.
This is Taylor Jackson. I was going to say your name. Okay. But you always have the right to say your own name.
Oh, you say my name for me.
Okay, this is Taylor Jackson. Here, say my name too.
Oh, and this is Andy Piper.
And we're signing off.